And I think what can happen is for folks who are avoidant, there is a people-pleasing aspect to the avoidant style in order to avoid conflict, right? So there's like a lot of that conflict avoidance that happens.
So much.
And so you're like, oh, I'm not going to bring up the hard stuff or the things I really want to know about you because it might rock the boat a little bit. And so I'm going to just pretend like all of this is okay.
Welcome to Latchkey Urchins and Friends, the podcast that is healing trauma with humor.
Latchkey kids was a term invented in the 1970s about kids left home alone at young ages to fend for themselves.
The downstream impact of a whole generation of unparented kids is a society in which we struggle to care about each other.
I'm one of your hosts, Anne Sherry, a therapist. I'm an urchin because emotional and physical self-care are just not instinctual.
I'm your other host, Allison Sibula, a trauma science educator. I'm an urchin because I have a prickly exterior that keeps people at a distance.
Join us as we muddle through the healing journey in search of connection, compassion, and acceptance, interviewing experts and people with lived experience each episode. Allison.
Hey, Anne, and hey, everybody, all of our listeners.
Yes.
We are feeling good.
We are feeling good.
Today.
We don't know if it's the coffee or like chocolate, Adderall. No, I'm not taking Adderall, but yeah. No, something feels good. Spring.
I'm taking Wellbutrin.
Okay, well, that helps. Spring is helping, yeah. Although it's cold as
it helps a lot. Spring, yeah. Spring energy, because it's spring starts tomorrow. It starts a day early.
Does? Who made up that?
Yeah.
Is that like a...
I think because of February 29th being that extra day.
Right. Okay. All right. Happy, is it an equinox? Is that what we call them? Or solstice?
Yeah.
No, equinox. Yep. Right. Okay.
Yeah. Equinox. Yes. Equinox.
All right.
Yeah.
Gosh.
So we're so excited for you all to hear our interview with Elizabeth Gillette.
Attachment expert. And my goodness. Yes.
Yeah. She has done her own
for reals.
And it just really shows.
Yep.
She has presence. She has wisdom. And it's like, honestly, I feel like we say this every time with all of our guests. And it's just hitting me what an honor it is to get to share these conversations. I'm getting all, this is how good we feel. I'm just getting all grateful and like I'm going to cry. Yeah. But just like we just get to hang out with the best people.
And each other. You know? Yes. We get to hang out with each other. Yeah. Well, I was really like as a therapist in private practice. And just I think our culture period. And this is sort of what she's talking about. Like, how do we be in community? How do we like be with each other? Like, how do we a lot of us are not securely attached. And so being with people is hard. So something, I mean, this, I'm like, oh, I always, even though this is at the end of a therapy day, often when we record, I'm like, oh, how am I going to muster it? I am always
totally
enlivened and because of the connection, I think, even though that part of me, I think, well, it may always be there of like, oh, I can't, another thing. And it's not that strong, actually. It probably used to be that strong. More and more, I'm like, no, this is great. I can't wait to spend time with this person. So... But anyways, I'm really appreciating that this is our little community here. And hopefully I know we've got a community of people out there.
Yes, and I want to share a really nice promotional post. So we interviewed Carrie in January of season two. So,
Carrie Sipp,
you know, a little over a year ago.
Yep.
Carrie Sipp about her sobriety journey and not passing trauma on to her kids. And so she... is friends with our guest from last time, Sharon Hirsch. And it makes me so, I didn't know that when we interviewed Sharon. And it makes me so happy to think about all these interconnections, you know, and like, yeah, this really is a community. And Carrie posted this episode on LinkedIn to promote it, which it's like, thank you, Carrie. And she said, love children, tired of seeing innocent children suffer because of poverty and racism. Their parents working so hard, they have trouble forming a healthy bond with their little ones, and policies that foster neglect and abuse and cost North Carolina taxpayers more than $4,000 every minute in healthcare, costs to the justice system, and lost worker productivity. Join three bold, brave, brilliant, and sometimes a bit brazen, she says the host, not the guest. That was me last time.
Yes.
Advocates for positive childhood experiences and concrete community supports for stressed out and under-resourced parents. And, you know, goes on to promote the episode. Thank you so freaking much,
thanks,
Carrie.
Thanks, Carrie. Oh, I love, like, then I can, like, picture her and get her energy back. And just feel, I can remember what it was like to be with her. So, and us being in,
she has a really infectious enthusiasm.
God, I remember like how many different types of therapy she tried. I was like, wow. Yeah, she just did them all. It was amazing.
She tried all of all.
Them. It worked. It worked. We don't know which one worked, but I think it was the combo. They all worked. So, yes.
And it's kind of amazing how many good folks there are right in North Carolina.
You're rocking it here in North Carolina. South. Yeah. So proud of us.
Yeah.
It may be because.
Yes.
I'm in North. No, because a lot of, you're finding the North Carolina people. I find some North Carolina people.
I'm finding
them too. You're in California and connecting with these. Yeah. Go North Carolina. Keep
it's
it up.
It's super.
Keep up the good work.
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah, yep. Absolutely. So we hope that you love our conversations. We have part one and part two.
We finally did so it. This is our first part one, part
we
two.
We did a part one and part two. Yep. So you'll get part two next week with Elizabeth with like deep, gooey feelings.
Yep.
That we would have called, what would we have called them in season one?
Oh.
What did we say feeling, about feelings?
Disgusting.
Gross. They were gross. Like,
yeah. And we're gooing up. We are just,
we've come
we
so
have,
far.
It's that fucking
we've
feelings
come so
wheel
far.
Game, I think. Like, so practice feeling feelings. And eventually it like becomes less scary. Everything becomes a little less scary if you practice it, I reckon. Dribs and drabs.
Yeah.
On the reg.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Enjoy.
But you know damn well, and I know that I just can't keep telling you what to think now.
Hello.
Hello.
Allison, Elizabeth. I'm having to start today. That always makes me a little nervous. I feel like I haven't done enough radio, like you, Allison.
Started when I was
that, like,
12.
Radio voice.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, I told you. I used to host a show called Kid Talk Radio starting in fifth grade. Yeah. It was on the radio.
Son of a
I know.
Bitch. I didn't know that. I have listened to you. Like, you were on, like, a sports talk. Not a sports talk. Something. I, like, tuned into something in California. And
yeah.
It was like,
I go on live radio
in like,
California.
Oh, my God. She's taking live questions?
Yeah. Yep.
I was like,
By,
nope,
like.
Nope, nope. Anyways.
Really conservative locals. Like, combative.
Right.
I know.
Yes.
It's kind of fun, though.
Yes.
Yeah.
That feels
God. Yeah. No, my trauma would have shut me down. I tried to speak in a meeting once and had a full curl up meltdown at a Kinko's meeting. I was working at Kinko's at 27 in Spartanburg, and I had a full shutdown. That's weird. Yeah. Anyways, I knew something was up. Okay. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi. It's so nice to be here. Thank you all so much for having me.
Thank you for coming on. So I'll read your bio. The overall subject here is attachment in relationships. So Elizabeth, I just know you through the therapy community here in Asheville. She's one of our stars. So Elizabeth Gillette is an attachment specialist. In her therapy and coaching practices, she supports her clients in developing secure ways of relating and improving their relationships by breaking old patterns
and Establishing Healthy Connections with Integrity. She is the author of Attachment Theory Workbook for Couples. Elizabeth believes in the healing power of connection, community, long walks, warm cups of tea. No alcohol in this bio. Okay. Okay. She lives in Asheville, North Carolina with her family. Yes. Yes. Yeah. So welcome. Welcome.
Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I'm really excited to chat with y'all today.
Yes. Do we just dive right into the latchkey questions?
Let's do it.
Okay. Okay. You, since I had to go through that and address my trauma and move through being able to talk, I'm going to ask for help and support here, Allison.
Sure.
Can you start the latchkey questioning?
Yeah, I will. So,
okay.
Elizabeth, so we, we didn't define latchkey, but urchin is our own thing. Latchkey is when you came home after school, you know, maybe at an age that was like maybe a little too young and no one was home, or you kind of spent just a lot of time by yourself. Urchin is more like your emotional needs weren't being met. And then friend is sort of the catch-all. So were you a latchkey, an urchin, or a friend?
So I feel like I was somewhere between an urchin and a friend.
Yeah.
I was a very deeply feeling child.
Yeah.
And I think most adults at that point in my life probably weren't able to meet me where I was, and not necessarily because they didn't try, but more because I think they didn't recognize like my sort of like inner life. And of course, now I work with lots of clients who had similar experiences. So I feel like I was somewhere in the middle. And I know we'll probably talk more about my childhood as we go today. But I think that would be my response to that one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, the second question is, what was the emotional environment of your childhood? Mm-hmm. Roll right into that. Yeah.
Yes. So for that piece, I feel like what's the right way to say it? I feel like my parents were loving and nurturing, and it was inconsistent. And so I think because both of my parents, like a lot of kids in that time of life, like I was born in 1985, both of my parents worked full time. They were super busy. Life was really full. My dad worked in retail. And so he was gone. I mean, like very long days, like 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. So there were a lot of days in the week where I didn't even see him. And so it was mostly like my mom on in the evenings. And I feel like she, you know, she was very loving. And I also feel like she had so much on her plate. So it was, it was very inconsistent. And I think that when I recognize that inconsistency because of everything that my parents were faced with, that gave me a lot of clarity around my own attachment style stuff.
Yeah. It's so cool to kind of do that. I don't know if it's a full circle or it's more just that we, as you do this deeper work and no doubt study attachment, like that you can, as you heal, then there's just more space to kind of, I don't know, see how much suffering there is through our parents, their parents, you know. Yeah. And then when you have kids, because you have two kiddos, right?
Yes, I have two kids. I have a 4-year-old and an almost 1-year-old. And so I think that's another piece of it too, is I look back and I just think about, especially my mom, like how much she was holding. And I'm like, you had no space for yourself. I don't understand how you were able to show up for us in the ways that you were. Like how did you do that? Yeah. You know, there was just no room.
Yeah. Yeah. Very, very tight. Yeah. Mm. Okay. Food.
And did you mention kind of where you grew up? If you did, I missed it.
So I grew up in southeastern Michigan.
Okay.
It was a pretty rural area at that point in time. It's a lot busier now. But like suburbs of Detroit area.
Got it.
I cannot imagine having to, the winters that you probably experience, having to deal with all the fucking clothes and keep a kid warm on the bus or waiting for the bus or whatever. Like, that's another trauma that the Florida people don't have.
Yeah. Yeah. Sunscreen, yeah. I guess.
There was a lot. Yeah. There's a lot in there. Snowsuits, right? I mean, yes. It's just like, no. It's a whole other layer of like getting ready for school in the morning and waiting at the bus stop in the very cold, dark, right? I mean, it's like,
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it used to be cold. I grew up in Spartanburg. It used to be, I can remember like being such probably a, I don't know, maybe sensory stuff or whatever. You couldn't, like, I wore what I wanted to wear. And like, it was, by God, I'm going to wear this like thin dress or these thin pants. And I am like at the bus stop at 6:45 in the morning. And it's probably 20 below that morning. And I'm just like, well, you did it to yourself, you know.
That's right.
Anyways, yes, those were fun times. Yeah. Yeah. And buses were cold. So how about food? That's our yummy third question. What's your go-to meal?
Wait, as a fellow,
lots of mac and cheese.
Yeah, as a fellow millennial, because I was born in 84, I was like, I want to guess. I'm like, was it Pop-Tarts? Yes. Was it cereal? Oh. Was it mac and cheese? Was it ramen? Oh. Hold on. were Gushers part of the equation ever in your childhood?
100%.
Oh, no.
Gross. Love Gushers.
What are those?
I miss Gushers.
Teddy Grahams, didn't you? Teddy Grahams? Yes. Something about Teddy Grahams. You and somebody else. Yes.
And I used to love these, like, broccoli cheese noodles in a box.
Oh,
like, and they came with like a packet.
This was a Midwestern thing.
The other thing I really love.
Okay,
yes.
Wait. Yes. The broccoli was dried thing. Or something, or a flavor. It was. Okay.
Yes. Getting your greens.
Yep.
Yes. Uh-huh. Yes. Okay. Yep. Sure.
And then there were these Chips Ahoy cookies, but they had to be the chewy ones.
Oh, the chewy ones were really good.
And you put them in the
really
microwave
good.
For 10 seconds.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yep. Y'all had microwaves. We had toasters mm-hmm. only. Yeah.
We did have microwaves. Yeah. Yeah. We had the 80s microwave like for my entire childhood.
Oh, with the.
Yeah. It was like a crank. Yep. Yeah. Yep. And it was like brown, medium brown. Yeah.
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah. Do you ever wonder like how much radiation you received from that? Like I think about that.
Okay.
Sometimes.
No, you guys, sure. I had this recurring nightmare in my childhood, recurring nightmare that I all of a sudden realized I was trapped in a microwave.
Oh my God.
Yeah, that's how stressful my childhood was.
Okay. We were just, we got them and we just started burning stuff in it, like plastic and whatever
totally.
We could melt and then dropping it. I have plastic scars on my leg where we dropped whatever.
Oh God. New traumas unlocked.
Yeah. Yes. Well, as you get older and your collagen goes away, like all the scars become more and more visible. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that one, that big piece of saran wrap that was melting from just burning shit.
Okay.
Memory lane.
But are y'all using retinol? Yeah. Are you guys, did you get on the retinol train?
What's that?
Oh, no. Okay.
I'm still nursing.
Oh,
and
you're
so
still
I
nursing.
Cannot. And it feels like I'm just looking at myself in the mirror some days and I'm just like, wow, I feel like I'm missing this really important window of time.
Wait, what is
I got on the retinol train? Just the Trader Joe's one for $8. I've been using it every day for a year. I mean, it is like I have a new face. Like, people are correct.
What the fuck?
No, you, Anne, I'm
all
sorry.
Right, can I get on it?
Yes, just go to Trader Joe's.
I'm over.
And your face will break out when you first start to use it.
Sorted.
But then after the initial round of breakouts, then you're good. What it does is it, like, regenerates your cells faster. So you'll get all the stuff will come out at once. And then after that, I'm serious. I have, like, a whole new face.
But wear sunscreen.
Okay.
Right.
Wear sunscreen with it.
Okay.
Yes.
Got it.
During the day. Yeah.
Got it.
I just put the retinol on at night. And then,
the grandmother stuff come on. And I'm like, I'm not ready to embrace my crone yet. Like age spots. And I'm like, I'm not wise enough yet. Like, hold on, age spots. I'm coming.
You're not a crone yet, Anne. You're still a gorgeous young woman.
Well, I'm going to embrace it. Yeah.
No, when you get there.
All right.
You're not there yet.
All right. Well, yes. Let's do this will be pre-retinol if you post any videos. And then, next, at the beginning of fourth season, we'll see. Is it therapy? Is it energy work? Or is it retinol?
If any retinol brands want to sponsor our pod, here we are. We'll take it.
Yeah. I know, it does sound like a commercial.
It does.
Okay. Not yet. We're practicing. Okay. All right. Whew. Okay.
So now, I want to.
Attachment.
We're going to talk to Elizabeth about attachment. And so I want to share, by the time this episode airs, I will have launched my next intentional life project. I've done a couple of intentional life projects. In 2012, I did this thing where I couldn't say anything negative about myself or anyone else for 6 months. And I got pledges from people and posted my update kindness project, challenge. Right? Yeah. And that completely changed my life, like making that intentional. And I was like, oh, well, I'm not going to go back. I'm just going to keep being kinder. And then
you millennials and your projects and your saving. No, because the world.
I'm not motivated unless I make it a project. Yeah. So then in 2016, I decided to quit sugar for a year. And that was the best thing ever. And I never went back. And so now in the year 2024, I would like to meet my person. So this is where you come in and our conversation around attachment.
Yes, Elizabeth.
Oh my God, I'm so excited. Yeah, she's giving us a nod, a knowing nod. So yes. I am doing this project where I'm traveling by train across Europe and going on dates in various large European cities. And I'm going to be sharing my journey.
Wow.
Yeah.
This is incredible.
Thank you.
You're going to go back to slow and your guy is waiting. Have you not seen any rom-coms or any dating movies?
I've dated every eligible man in
slow. And then you go back to slow.
No.
And the farmer that just moved back to take care of his aging father who owns like 80 acres and is like, you know, the kindest, whatever. So that's what's going to happen.
Thanks for your support, Anne.
I know you're going to meet. I support you 100%. I can't wait. I'll be on that website every day. Yes. Yes.
So that being said, we want to talk attachment. And just how did you maybe get into therapy, and why does this particular type of modality, you know, why is that something that you were drawn to?
Yeah. So I think like most people, I stumbled upon this thing that has become what I feel like is my life's work through my own journey. And I found myself in my relationship with my now partner, my husband. We've been together for over 12 years.
Amazing.
And in the beginning of our relationship, we kept having these arguments, these issues, these things that would come up. And I felt so insecure. And I was like, this doesn't feel like it's about him. It feels like it's about something else.
Yeah.
But I'm bringing it to the relationship. And he was like, what is happening? Mm. Like, what are you doing? Mm. You know, so we were able to have that conversation where I was like, I don't really know what's going on.
Yeah.
But I can't, it feels like I can't help it. I don't know what this is. And so a friend, I was telling her about what was happening.
Yeah.
She was also, you know, getting into being a therapist. And she was like, I really think that you should read Hold Me Tight by Sue Johnson. And so I read it, and she is an emotionally focused therapist. She's, you know, discovered this framework of therapy. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is it. This is everything. It has to do with my attachment style.
Yeah.
I feel insecure in my relationships. And so I sabotage them.
Yeah.
And I do that really, really well every single time. And so when I started really diving into
it's good
this,
to be like, good at something though, like to sabotage
right?
well,
and I
right?
was so like, good
yes,
at it.
Yeah, go, yeah,
so good at it.
Let's not criticize that.
I could pick a fight out of literally anything.
Yep.
I could make someone doubt their love for me. I could go from having a wonderful evening to just making it the absolute worst time you could ever imagine. And I could drag a fight out for hours.
That sounds so familiar. God damn
yes.
it.
Same, same.
Yes.
Same, same.
It was,
yes.
Yes.
Same.
So it was
same.
Like,
yes.
It was terrible, right?
And all not, good at it. All good,
good
at
it.
Sabotage.
Why?
Yep.
Wait.
Yep. Yep.
Why do we do this?
It?
Why do we do this with the good times? Oh. Sounds like all three of us were like, oh yeah, I will do that.
Oh,
I will do
Tom
that.
Tom was like, you are miserable.
But why did, what's that one about though? What's the thing behind it?
Yeah.
What's going on there?
Yeah.
What are we
well,
doing, Elizabeth?
So to kind of dig into it a little bit, it's like with attachment work, it's essentially like how connected we feel to the people who are really important to us. It's like the quality of our bonds, whether we feel safe in the world. And when we're little, like very, very little, from like in the womb through the first 18 months of our lives, is when we create this most foundational blueprint for our relationships. And so throughout our lives, then we ultimately repeat the patterns that we experienced in childhood, right? Which is why I was like throwing tantrums in my adult relationships. I was like, no, you don't love me enough, right? And no matter what you do, it never feels like enough. And with that one in particular, we're talking about anxious attachment.
So you're anxious. And
with
you're an anxious one. Okay, mm-hmm. Anne and well, I are avoidant ones.
Yes.
So, right, Anne, I can, I can,
we're going to talk
about
loop
you in on that, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I can out avoid anyone. I give myself a trophy in avoiding. Yeah. Okay.
Yes. Keep going. A for avoidance. There you go. Yeah. Yeah. And A for anxious and A for attachment. Like, oh my God.
We all get A's. That's right.
I know you do. You're doing such a good
Thank
job.
You.
And that's the thing. Like, what I want to say is that, my approach with this work is that we all come by it honestly. And no one chooses their attachment style. Like, I did not feel good about showing up that way in my relationships. It wasn't like I was proud of it. And I was like, yes, this feels like it's in my integrity. I'm aligned in my, it felt terrible.
Yeah.
And I always felt like my needs weren't met. It was just, it felt awful. And so another thing I want to preface this conversation with is, you know, to remind us that attachment styles can change, right? Which is why I do the work that I do, is because
under the,
you don't have to feel this way.
Under the avoidance is actually all the anxiety. Yeah. I actually really, the my theory terror. Is that the avoidance really one is terror. The freeze response. Yeah. And under the freeze is actually like a terrified kid with so much anxiety. And so I've been healing my freeze response, forget it. I mean, just forget it. Now it's like, now I have to deal with the other attachment style now. Come on.
I know. And
there's
the
only
thing
like
is,
three, so don't worry. Just keep going. Right.
Right. That's right.
Yeah. One down. Yeah.
So there's disorganized all or something. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
All of them. Right?
Yeah.
So okay. Like, yeah. And that's exactly what happens. It's like we heal one aspect of it. And then we're like, oh, now I'm faced with this other part. So I have to work on that. Right. And we're always trying to move towards secure. Secure is like the one for all of us.
Yeah.
And then the rest of them are considered insecure. So we have like anxious, avoidant, and disorganized. And disorganized is a combination of anxious and avoidant.
And that's the one that's pretty strongly linked with borderline that I've read. Borderline personality disorder.
That's right. Okay. So yes, like what we would call borderline personality disorder is, to me, it's essentially attachment trauma.
Yeah, totally.
And a total lack of safety in childhood, right? Mm-hmm. A lack of emotional safety, potentially a lack of physical safety. And so we have that approach avoid kind of dynamic. Like, I love you, but I'm terrified of you. That's what we're talking about when we're talking about the disorganized style.
Yeah.
Oh, awful.
Really hard to date. Can be.
I'm getting hot right now. I don't know if it's trauma or if it's another hot flash. Oh, well, did I take my progesterone last night? I don't know. Yeah. Anyways, yes, I'm feeling something. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. It's like, okay, bye. See you later.
Okay, that was enough.
Right. That's right.
Yeah, that was enough. Bye, Elizabeth. Thank you so much. Gotta go.
Thanks for coming on. We're going to go ahead and
so
end.
Uncomfortable.
I mean, God bless you. As a therapist, I'm like, no couples. Like, no. It feels too much. Let me reframe that. I'm in my power of the work that I do. I love it. But couples is, that's a lot of moving parts, I imagine.
It is. It's a lot of energy. It's a lot of, it's everyone's bringing their own stuff, right? Mm-hmm. And sometimes we have an awareness around what we're bringing in. Sometimes we don't. But I think that's where the attachment work comes in, is if we can look at it and we can sort of lay this framework over it and say, okay, what happened to you in your childhood, right? What was your childhood like? How did you learn to view the world?
Yeah.
And then based on that, how do you view relationships? Do you feel safe in your relationships? Do you feel like you can be yourself? Do you know who you are, right? Is that something you can bring to your relationships? And if not, how do we help create a structure that allows you to do that, right? And that's where I feel like the healing work happens, especially in couples and partnerships.
Yeah. I mean, the triggering is just right there all the time in that Diamond's Mag. Yeah. Yep. So there's so much
material to work with. And oftentimes we're drawn to the people whose patterning feels the most familiar to us, right? Which is like that thing about, you know, if you grow up in an environment where your emotional needs are not met, you will likely be drawn to someone who is more avoidant, who shuts down when there's an argument, who pulls away, right? Yeah. Who is just sort of like doing that thing where they're just like backing out of the room. And you're like, why can't you be there for me? And then you can kind of play out your own patterning because that feels familiar of like, I never get my emotional needs met. I never feel safe in relationships. I'm too much for everybody. Right. Like you can see how this occurs.
Well, and I've been listening to Carl Jung recently. I don't know if you've read any Jung. I hadn't actually before, you know, and I last year I visited not one, but two Freud museums. There's one in London. There's one in Vienna. I went to them both. The one in London is much better, FYI to everyone. So I was like, oh, I want to read like some of the source material. Like, let me like who, you know, the original dudes. And, I love the writing of Jung. Like, I see how much he influenced, the field of psychology and like, what an amazing thinker. Like, I would love to be able to meet him today. I mean, oh my God. But his whole thing, which kind of confirmed like a hypothesis that I had in my head, but hearing him talk about it is really interesting, where the unconscious, like the work of going in for therapy is to make the unconscious conscious. But if you don't go into a therapist every week and do that work, it is going to do the work for you. And it's going to do that in really weird sideways, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. So like you will pick the partner that your unconscious wounds are screaming for you to pay attention to them. And if you don't do it, you'll go for that abusive relationship because the unconscious wants to be known and seen. Wow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I found this with, cause I work in child trauma science education, which I have been working in this field for 5 years. And before that, I was a completely different field. I have never met more traumatized people in my life. Like so many sociopaths and narcissists in the field.
Right.
Because, and so then I was like, oh, it's because people's unconsciouses are, and their wounds are attracted to this field because it's like, I must be seen, I must be known. But instead of fixing themselves, people go out there and they're like, how can I go fix all the children in the United States? And I'm like, you need to back off of that mission and you need to go to therapy.
Yes. You need a little self-reflection.
Oh my God.
Stop writing manuals about therapy and actually go to therapy. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm just too struck by like, this is new-ish, the way that we're working, like really paying attention to attachment styles and like, right? I mean, like I was with talking with a client and just being able to say, look, we're in our 60s or 70s. It's like, it's not, we now know better what was happening, you know, so we can have a bit more compassion and also for self-compassion if you are in your 60s. Like, I've tried everything, nothing works. It's like we're actually getting better and more understanding and healing is possible actually in real practical ways, which it sounds like you're doing the work you're doing. Yes.
How did you?
You're helping children not repeat the cycle. Like kids, parents can heal. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or couples can heal. Not that you have to have children to do couples work, but it certainly helps because that's a big ass stressor. Children.
Well, And I think too, it's like, I always remind people, it's the children in your life, right? Like they don't have to be your own children. Like undoubtedly you have some kind of relationship with a child, right? Of like you have nieces or nephews or friends who have kids or, right? I mean, like you're just, you're shifting the way in which you relate to other people, all people.
Yeah.
And I think, so it's like, you don't have to be in a partnership to do attachment work and reap the benefits of it. Like you can just feel less anxious in your relationships. You can feel more confident in the friendships that you have. And I think that's also a big deal, right? So it's kind of like, it's reverberating out into the collective. Yes. So your work is so, like your personal work is so important in this.
Yeah.
Well, and I wanted to ask you about your personal work. So, you know, you started to kind of take us on your journey. You were in this relationship, which major props for starting this. You were like 12 years ago. And I was like, okay, like the book Attached hadn't been written then, I don't think, you know, or like it had just come out. So I don't, the resources were a lot fewer. So, you know, major props for finding this. I was really curious what book you were going to say that you ended up with. What did you realize about yourself? And then what did you have to change? And like, how hard was that?
It's hard, right? I'm just like, it's hard.
And when did you finish? Are you, you're done, right?
Yeah, where are you on this?
Yeah. And it's over, right? It's over. Okay. No?
Oh, okay. However,
but she is still married.
Yes, I'm still married, right? I'm still in this relationship with this wonderful human. And okay, so I realized about myself that I was trying to get validation that could not come from anywhere other than
yes.
Me. That's what I realized about myself is that I was looking for something and then I was finding it and then putting it into like a black hole.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I was like, oh, this feels good for now. And then it just disappears. And then I feel like shit again.
Yep.
And so it really took practice around recognizing when I was doing that and growing my awareness of how I was showing up and when I was kind of like doing this like graspy thing.
Yes.
Yeah. It also took recognizing, and this is where, you know, I know we're coming up with like different language for this now, but like recognizing my own codependent behaviors and the ways that I was trying so hard to control other people and try to get them to do the thing that I thought they should do.
Can you?
And then when they didn't do it, I would be very upset about it.
Totally. Yeah. That's the classic Melanie Beatty. Yeah. Can you define codependency for our listeners?
Sure. So when I think about codependency, I think about really, to me, it feels a lot like when we self-abandon. So this idea that we are disconnected from our own real needs, and instead we move outside of ourselves to try to control because that feels somehow more effective. We maybe learned that in childhood, right? That we had to do a lot of managing. And we really start intruding on other people. We start intruding on their boundaries. We start intruding on their needs. Yeah. And then when we don't like how they respond, we get upset and we come back to ourselves and we say, well, I told them that they should you know, blah, blah, blah. They need to do whatever. I know best.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. It's like this I know best kind of vibe. And it's really, it comes from a trauma, right? Of feeling like I have to be the grown up here. Or I have to manage this or I have to be the one always. Well, I'm always on.
Also,
and more come into like martyrdom, you know,
but more compassionately, Jung also says this in what I'm reading now, that we human beings have this tendency that it's actually just easier to notice what other people are doing. It's like just actually easier to be like, well, I'm noticing that you're doing that. Looking inward is like a serious intentional thing that we all have to do every day. Yeah. How am I controlling and projecting and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and blaming when I need to take a little moment here?
Yeah.
What do you always call it, Anna? U-turn.
U-turn. Yeah, IFS talks about that or other things, I'm sure. But I mean, this is Buddhism and contemplative Christianity. And like, so it's not really, but we are bringing spiritual practices into modern psychotherapy, which I don't know how you can't. I mean, it's really basic stuff that's been out there, like compassion.
Yeah.
And, you know,
but I just think we can offer ourselves more compassion knowing that the human condition is to other all the time, like notice others, talk about others, complain about others. Like it is just like part of our experience that
Well, and it's also, I mean, I think we can't sort of decontextualize it. Like we have to recognize that it's also part of our modern sort of privilege to be able to even do this work, right? And even thinking about it in terms of trauma, if you don't have the space to self-reflect because you're so busy having to manage what's happening in your world, right? And that's where I think, like, when I think about especially the avoidant attachment style, which both of you said you identified
with. Looked at us. Allison, did you see that? Just look away. Just look away. She looked right at us.
And it's like, right, all the love, because it's like, it has such a bad reputation in, in like popular culture. And this is my thing, right? Like, this is how I started to really dig into this, like, very specific work, is I read Attached. And I was like, what is this?
He hates it. He like, hates avoidant people. He hates us. He hates us.
Do you know that they have now come forward and said, we wish we had done this differently because we recognize the significant bias that we have in sharing about this. And so I just want to say that too, like if you are out there, please don't Google avoidant attachment. I have so many resources for you about the good stuff that's out
give
there
those to
that's
us.
Really
we'll put them in the show
and
notes.
Informed and research based.
No, when we'll post about avoidant,
because it has such a bad rap.
I've done a few TikTok videos that have gotten like 70,000 views on avoidant attachment and my healing journey. People come for me in the comments. Like they come for me. They're you guys, you avoidants are the worst. I wish you would just stay away from us. Sometimes they're like, I wish you would just die. You lead us on, and then you you just leave.
And this is like this is what I mean. I am just, and if you look at any of my blog posts about avoidant attachment, they are all up in the comments, right? And I say they because I have the anxious attachment style, right? And I really did believe that before. I was like, you know, in my very early healing,
tell
I was
us.
Like, there is something wrong with people who are avoidant. And I am like, and now I am like, I love avoidant people, right?
Yes.
Because I see, I see where it comes from. And so much of it comes from emotional neglect, right? Because, and the way that I think about it, it's like, if you don't mind, if I just go with it.
Yeah, roll.
Because it's like, when I think about this, when you are a child, if you don't experience that emotional reciprocity where like, it's like volleying back and forth, right? Where like you put something out there and your caregiver responds.
I know. I'm like, and Elizabeth, you, tears,
I'm
tears,
about
tears,
to cry.
Stop.
Just.
Yes. No, keep going. Keep going. Keep
it, right. Yeah, so we don't just need to feel stop. It in your body, right?
Totally.
And just notice that feeling, because that to me is like your healthy attachment system wanting
it,
right? So just like noticing. And so when you don't have that volley back and forth, you put it out there and it falls flat, right? And so after a while, you don't put it out there anymore because no one is meeting you there. No one is responding. Mm-hmm. And so you essentially learn how to prune back these parts of you that want so desperately to connect, right? Like that is, that's what happens. Because it's the same thing of like, if you don't use it, you lose it, right? And we talk about that with neural pathways. We talk about that with habit building. We talk about that, like, you know, it's the same kind of thing. Your brain learns that it's not safe. It's not okay. Right. You may even receive criticism for it. Right. Which is even worse of like, don't be so emotional. You're way too sensitive. That's not what we do in this family. Right. Those types of things. And so you learn to prune it back. Then you get into adulthood and people expect you to know how to connect and be in relationship. And you're like, I'm sorry. Relationships are not safe, right? I can do superficial. I can do surface. We can be friends, right? But as soon as we move into this place where it gets deeper, I'm getting the hell out of here.
Yeah.
Because this is not what I signed up for, right? Mm-hmm. And you don't know how to do it. And so then you have all these people criticizing you and telling you you're a bad human.
Yes.
Because relationships feel scary. And you're like, okay, well, I mean, this is, I came by this honestly, right? So I just have all the love in my heart for people who have the avoidant style.
Oh, I'm going to take a moment and just take that in. Thank you for cheerleading for us. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And one thing, I mean, that, and it takes, I just want to put it out there. It takes a long time. Hang in there. Keep going. It takes a while to heal any of this, but that the avoidant to actually come back into their body and start to feel the ick and the shame. And I've only recently feel like I've had significant shifts because like some parts wanted to kill me, but you know, whatever. Kind of used to that. And it was the shame, actually being able to process almost on an energy work type stuff. Like, just try all the things. Just keep going and go to Elizabeth's website because she will tell you you're okay.
Yeah.
But I found like there's – and in modern society, too, there's so many ways to check out. Like, when I got really curious about my scrolling habits and then I slowed it down, it is fucking terror. Terror is what is in there.
Yeah.
Terror.
Yeah.
I was like,
that's right.
Wow.
That's right. And Allison mentioned it before. Yeah. It is. It's all anxiety underneath.
Yes.
Totally. Okay, so you gotta like move through that. Yeah. Yeah. So, and that is crazy.
Well, I think,
to an avoidant to move through anxious. Yeah.
Yeah. Fear of rejection and that kind of rejection trauma. Okay. Tears are coming up. Underlies like almost every relationship decision I've ever made, whether it being like not getting close enough to people who might be like safer emotionally, to actually jumping into relationships way too quickly with people who are not emotionally available just to avoid feeling rejected. So it's like it kind of rears its head in every different way.
Yes, it does.
Yeah. Yep.
Yes, it does. That's right. And I think too, again, it's like when we look at those early relationship dynamics, if we don't feel like we're receiving that reciprocity, it taps into our sense of worthiness even, right? I mean, like, am I worth interacting with? Am I worth engaging with? Am I worth being in relationship with? Yeah. And I mean, I think too, we see that in all of the insecure styles, right? Mm-hmm. Like, am I okay? Right. Am I safe in the world also? Right. Like, are you going to show up for me? If I put myself out there, will you meet me there? And so many of us with the insecure styles, we don't get that, or we don't get it consistently, which is another, you know, real mind fuck. Because then we're like, okay, I get it sometimes, but I don't get it other times. So I have to start looking outside of myself for when am I going to get it and how do I make sure that I get it, which is kind of, it leads into that codependency stuff.
Right?
Like, I can learn how to read the room.
I chose hard
and manage
drugs.
Other people.
Drugs are a good one.
Hard drugs met the need for me. Right. Yeah. That was, the hug I wanted. Yep. And I got to control it. I got to control when I got the hug and exactly. Yeah.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They should be like, was there an 80s phrase, hugs, not drugs or something? It's like, hugs or drugs.
No, right. Hugs.
Also, you better hug you get or hugs. There'll be drugs. Yeah. Parents. So hug up. Yeah. If you want to do drug prevention.
Well, no. And but like, also the thing is that like our parents, all three of us, I'm sure we're doing the very best that they could. So I also want to come back and just, we're not throwing parents under the bus. Like,
Never. Season one, yes, we might have. But like by season, we've healed a lot through this.
Well,
so
no.
And,
start here.
And I do, I tell all my clients that, right? Like it's not, I think we can only act on what we know, right? And so, but that's another thing I do think is really important to name here is like in the parents that I work with now, parents are showing up so much differently, right? And I just kudos to all the parents out there who are recognizing what is happening and recognizing what happened in their own families and wanting to do things differently. Yeah. I see people diving in head first and it is not easy work, right? Yeah. And I think it's also important to name that whatever you heal for your own, like the children in your life, you're also healing generationally, right? So like, And you don't have to break every single pattern to be effective or to do something good. Like, give yourself a little bit of grace, because it is so intense. And I think that, there's a lot for us to become aware of, and we can experience a lot of grief with that too.
The grief is endless. Yeah. Yeah. There's always more grief to unpack.
Well, and that there's Tara, and I mean, people are really, really, I'll get stuck here, you know? So that's really kind of addressing fears and concerns, which is a big one on the internal family systems. And I'm sure other modalities, what are you afraid is going to happen? And can we just sit with that together? And can we do a little bit of it? Or can we test it out? So really working incrementally, because there's that way we understand it in our head, and then we're like, well, the self-intellectualization, but really where the significant shifts came is like really being with the shame, the ick, the mud, the mud, the mud, the mud. And there's that phrase, no mud, no lotus, you know. So Thich Nhat Hanh book, I think, or I heard it in a meditation something, and I was like, yes, the mud, the lotus grows out of the mud. Which is where the Divine Mother is. So it's young.
Yeah, that's good. I wanted to know what Enneagram type you are, Elizabeth, if you know.
I do know.
She lives in Asheville. Of course she knows. Wait, everybody knows.
Hold on. Let me guess in my head.
It's on your license.
Yes.
It's on your license.
Are you a 2?
In Asheville. Yes.
You know what, Allison? I thought I was a 2 for the longest time.
Okay. So I'm not that far off. Okay.
You're not. And then my friend sat me down one day and she was like, I have to talk to you. And I was like, what? And
we
she
need
was
to
like,
go to the DMV
a,
and change
not
your
a
license.
I know exactly. You better edit that, because you are actually a self-pressed 3. So I am
next to a 2.
A 3 that next tries to pretend she's not a 3.
Okay.
And there's like that thing of like, I want you to think I'm good vibe about the self-pressed 3, right? Of like doing all the things to try to be good.
Yes.
And that, I mean, it's just, when I look at that, I mean, it was just like the glass shattered, right? And I was like, oh, now I really see myself, right? Wow. In my younger years and all the things, like it made so much sense. And there's a real drive to want to do good, right? It's like, to want to change things, to want to change the system, to want to, you know, so I'm a self-person.
For our listeners,
I mean,
3
look at
is
her
the
website
achiever.
And stuff. You can see. Yeah, that's some 3 stuff.
2 is the helper.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Everything you do put out there is so pretty.
Thank
yes.
You.
Yeah. Thank Easy you. To be with. Yeah. Mm. Okay.
Got All it. Right. Got it. Well, so
wow.
I want to given the timing of this interview with my project, I want to make sure I get some advice that hopefully will all be also be helpful to listeners. So for one, I think even creating this challenge way, way, way harder than all the other challenges that I've done, because even just saying I'm looking for someone is like so mortifying to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like needing someone is like embarrassing. Isn't that wild?
Well, and gosh, and it is wild to me, because I feel like in our culture, there's so much focus on being partnered, right? But then when we're like, oh, I'm looking for someone, people are like, oh, you know, it's kind of it's this really funny thing that we do culturally. But I think what I would remind you of is that our brains are wired to connect. Like, of course you want to find somebody, because that's like what we're supposed to do. I mean, like, not just one person necessarily, but like, that's what we're designed to do, is be in connection with other people in a way that feels good to us. And I actually think that is like our literal purpose on the earth, is to be in safe connection with other people. So just a reminder, wanting that and desiring that is 100% healthy. And again, like I mentioned in the beginning, it's your healthy attachment system coming online saying like, I want this. This is what I'm designed for. Right? So of course,
Allison, you're healthy. You're practicing healthy stuff.
You are.
Yeah.
You are.
Thank you. I'm trying to think like how am I most going to get in my own way? Maybe I would ask you.
Get her couple's workbook. Like do the
skills. Oh yeah. 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 What do you notice most from
whoever's on the train with you?
Avoidance, yeah. Avoidant attachment, people that you work with of how we self sabotage. Mm-hmm. Like, what do I want to be on the lookout for?
Mm-hmm. I would say it's important to move slowly and to regularly check in with yourself before you overcommit to something. So like, I think this is the thing that can happen is it can feel really good in the beginning because it's like all new and you know what I mean? Yeah. It's like your attachment system is like doing all the things. And then you start to like wade in a little bit deeper and you're like, oh, wait. And I think what can happen is for folks who are avoidant, there is a people pleasing aspect to the avoidant style. Yeah. In order to avoid conflict, right? So there's like a lot of that conflict avoidance that happens.
So much.
And so you're like, oh, maybe I'm not going to bring up the hard stuff or the things I really want to know about you because it might rock the boat a little bit.
Elizabeth,
I'm going to just pretend like all of this really is okay.
You're really hitting, I didn't think you were going to be able to just pin me and you're getting every point.
Oh,
keep going. Sorry. I'm just like, wow.
Yes.
It's okay.
Elizabeth has like, courses online too. Like there are courses that you can buy.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yep.
Yes.
There's an understanding avoidant attachment course that I created where I talk all about this. And what I did with that one is it's for people who are avoidant and it's also for people who are in relationship with avoidant people. There's a whole section for like how to navigate that and how to be more welcoming with your person who is avoidant. And because I think that, it's like, and then you realize you're in it and you're like, oh, wait, I don't want to be in this. And that's when people start like potentially ghosting people or like checking out or being like, all right, I'm done. Thanks. That was fun. Right. Yeah. And like, it's just, and then you find yourself in this place where you're like, wait, I do really want a relationship, but it feels too intense. And I think having some regulation skills is really important. People with the avoidant style often learn how to auto-regulate. So being in relationship and regulating, meaning like calming yourself down or like navigating intensity, can feel like too much because you've learned how to do that all on your own. But learning how to co-regulate can be really helpful. Like,
that sounds gross.
I know.
It's the worst.
I don't know if I've ever
experienced. I've heard Jason or somebody talking about it, and I was just, co-regulation, I got it with my kid. That was, not that I'm, like, not in a relationship, but that was helpful, I think, to do, you know, get
but
in
that's
the bed
easy, and that's easy. Because I used to be a school teacher. Like, you can, be like, cool, I'm going to regulate so that the kids here can regulate. Yes. It's to me, it's like a whole different beast when it's a partner and you have all the insecure ones are all rejection based. It's all the avoidance of negative feelings and from your childhood. Yeah. So when you're in remember Jason was calling it a high stakes relationship.
Do you know Jason Gaddis? What's his, the relationship school or anyways? Yeah.
Yeah. We had him on.
I'm definitely going to check it out.
Yeah. He's awesome. Yeah. But that when he said that high stakes relationship, it finally clicked for me what it is, why intimate partner relationships feel so hard compared to our other relationships, because the stakes are so high. And, like people who like to be in relationships with people who are married, the reason they do that is because the stakes are low. It feels like a relationship, but there's no stakes because you can't get rejected because that person's already in another relationship. And so
pre-rejection,
when it comes to co-regulating with a partner, I honestly don't know that I've ever had a relationship where that has felt really good and healthy.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And so what I would say is like starting in friendships, for example, that you have with people where you are able to call them and say, you know what, I'm having a really hard time.
You're pretty good at that, Allison.
Can you help me with this? Like aren't you? That's, and
I am good
too,
at that.
Yeah, it's interesting because I,
yeah.
Yeah.
No,
right.
No, so great like, advice.
Already,
keep going.
You're already in it.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, yeah. So you're already in it. You're already doing the things. And so I think for you in this, right, like developing your confidence that you actually do have a lot of skills and you actually have done a lot of work, right? And that not every relationship works out. And that is just how it is, right? It's not because there's something wrong with you or the person that you're in relationship with. A lot of relationships don't continue, right? It's just like, because so many things have to be present in order to make the decision to want to continue that relationship. So if you can sort of lower the stakes for yourself a little bit, right? And say like, this is not that people are like, you practice on them, but it's good practice for me to actively try to be in relationship and to stretch myself a little bit when I'm in relationship. Can I say this thing that feels a little bit vulnerable without falling off the edge of the cliff?
Anne and I have been practicing that intentionally. We have done that several times. So you're so right, because Anne and I, we work together really closely, probably more than anyone else in my life, because we have to produce this podcast about trauma. And we've been doing it for 3 years. And conflicts come up. And my normal inclination is to never talk about them ever, ever. Just pretend it did not exist. Yeah. And Anne, luckily, is such a safe person.
To avoidance.
I know.
You're doing it.
That I've been like, it's Anne, can we have a tough conversation? Something's coming up and it's not feeling good. And Anne, you've just been such a wonderful person to practice with, but it has felt so hard every time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it does feel hard. And it continues to feel hard. And that to me actually means that you're on the right path. If it's feeling difficult, if it's feeling uncomfortable, then you're doing the right things and keep going.
Thank you.
There you go. Yay. Already halfway there. You're closer than you, probably three quarters of the way there. Yes.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who knows?
And there's there. It's just keep practicing. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, 100%. Yes.
Yeah. So, Anne, you want to ask like our final question and then we'll do the feelings wheel?
What kind of world are you trying to create or would you like to create or see created
with your work?
I love this question. Yeah, I feel like, gosh, it makes me step back, right? And like have, it gives me like a little bit of perspective, right? Because I get so caught up in like doing these little things all the time. I feel like the world I would love to see is one where people feel safe being themselves, where they feel like they have the tools and resources to work through the things that they've gone through and that they can be in safe and loving relationship and be able to feel held in that way. Because I really do feel like it's like the point of being here. Is to have good community and have good relationships and know that you can receive that reciprocity even if you didn't have it when you were younger.
I want to live in that world.
Yes, yes you too. Are. She just told you. Did you hear? She's told you you're well on your way.
Yes. You are. It's true.
Yes.
It's true. Yes,
you're part of the Hands Across America or whatever we did, whatever y'all had to solve.
The cult in the 80s,
or whatever you millennials had to save everybody, save everything. Yeah.
I'm just trying to save myself now.
Better than latchkey. Like, who gives a fuck about anybody? Right. So, yes. Moving towards something better. Yay.
All right.
Yeah. Okay.
And I know that I just can't keep telling you.
Feelings wheel.
Oh, feelings wheel.
Yeah, the Wayne's World sound. What do they do?
They go like this. Wayne's World, right?
Yeah, yeah. They do something with their hands. Yeah, I don't know. That was a great.
Yeah.
Did you know that movie was directed by a woman?
No. Wow. Wayne's World, the original one?
I was looking at a list of like highest grossing films directed by women, and it's a real short list. And so that's on there because there aren't that many. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So fun fact of the day.
Barbie was directed. Yeah. Okay.
So.
All right. Am I first?
Yeah, you're first.
This time? Okay.
Okay. Are you ready?
I don't know if you heard this, but it's you get the word. When have you felt it recently? Where do you feel it in your body? Okay. Give me a positive one. Come on, I want some toxic positivity. That was...
What is it? Okay.
Something good.
Scared.
Betrayed.
No. Oh, man. Immediately.
Scared is the word, scared. Y'all.
I know. That's an emotion. Okay. Yeah. That is in my belly immediately. Oh, wait. So wait. Familiar. Yes.
We didn't tell Elizabeth. We each get a different word.
Oh, yeah. You're not going to, you don't have to do scared. You're good. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So let go. Stop preparing three.
I was.
Oh, I'm going to make, I'm going to make the best scared, the most tight.
The most impressive. Right. That,
we did. We had one guest who would like come up with a whole thing and then they're like, oh, I don't get to say what I developed. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. So not scared. You could get something much worse or mm-hmm. better. Yeah. Mm-hmm. there's an immediate hit to the belly.
Okay.
Like just a anxiety, attention, something that is caught that is so familiar. So there's a bit of the body sensation. Scared. It's so interesting because what we've been talking about just how like terror is underneath this avoidant and just how many layers I put on top of that to never appear scared. But I think once I really got into the work, it was so much like, I'm just scared. I'm just scared all the time. I'm scared of being rejected. So that's like, and I can feel tears around that. Yep. Just kind of, and like tears of like honoring a lifetime of like hanging in there, you know? So kind of scared about, is this scared or is this, it's not scared talking about being scared. There's actually feeling, so I can feel a little bit of scariness because I know that then I know I'm talking to you guys, but there's also a whole bunch of people that hear this, including my clients. And so it's almost moving up to my chest. There's a little panicky, I don't know if it's panic, but just a little, my heart's beating faster. I guess right now I'm feeling it, but in a way that I also feel attached to you guys. I'm like looking at you both, so I'm attached. So there we go, like really taking you both in and saying this is what it was. I mean, to even talk about this, I can feel the scary, but I also feel connection in speaking that I spent a lifetime trying not to be scared, but when I go down, it is so scary not to be witnessed or seen or to have any of your aliveness just fall flat again and again. Like that is latchkey generation. That is us. Many of us. So my latchkey brethren, who I love so much, even though we pretend like we don't see each other, hang in there, keep going. I know this can go to places of like wanting to die. That is like passive suicidal. No one cares, you know? And I do think we have, we lose people to that.
Yeah.
Yes.
So don't go anywhere. Go to your therapist.
No, yeah. We see
read Elizabeth's
you. We
book.
See
we do see you. Yeah.
Go take a course with Elizabeth.
I know.
Do.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
Come hang out.
Yeah.
I would love to hang out with you.
Yeah. Yes. So.
Oh, there that was so good. I really felt that one, Anne. Way to just dive in there.
Yeah.
Holy crap.
I did dive. You know, because I screamed the dragon out. There's more space in there to talk. Anyways, Elizabeth. I had some really kick-ass energy work and a dragon flew out with a lot of screaming.
That is amazing.
Yes, and it was really good. There's a lot more space.
Oh, yes. I love that so much.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yes.
Are
okay.
you? Is,
I'm going to get it.
Is this year of the dragon? Tattoo.
Yes. It is fucking year of the dragon. Yes. Everybody, incredible. Scream your dragon out. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's time. Scream it.
So, and the dragon's friendly. It really actually protects you. It can be very protective once it's out of you. It's really a friend. But when it's not, when you're holding everything inside, it wants you dead. So,
yeah.
A little bit like that. Okay. It tries to kill you, burn you up.
Okay. Mine is.
All right, go, Allison.
dismayed. Okay, hold on. I don't know if I know exactly what that means, so hold on. Dismayed. Cause to feel consternation. I also don't know what that means. And distress. They were dismayed by the U-turn in policy. Oh, kind of like, it's like close to feeling betrayed, but like smaller.
Yeah.
Consternation is feelings of anxiety or dismay. It's just
perfect.
just keep saying dismay. Just keep defining the word with the word. It's good. It's good.
Yeah. Typically at something unexpected. Weird.
Okay, here's one. Dismay describes an emotional state of alarm, fear, or serious disappointment.
Okay, so it's like a mixture of disappointment.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
With a little, fear, but doesn't it feel like it has a little bit of betrayal in it? Like, but, or something. Like, I wanted it to be this other way or something. But it's like gentler and friendlier. Like, not full betrayal, but a small one. Okay, hold up. So weird. I don't think I've ever
looking at it. It's not
used this word before. Yeah. So it's like, wow, like who knows what it feels like, you know? Like it's so cool to bring it in and be like, now I'm going to label stuff, you know? Like what I read, Brené Brown's book, The Atlas of the Heart, she describes the word anguish that I never used before. And all of a sudden I was like, oh, that's what I'm feeling. It's more than grief. You know, because like when my ex-boyfriend died, like anguish is like extreme, extreme grief of and loss. And it was so cool to add that, you know, like to the richness. So dismay, new one. Okay.
Yeah. I'll email Brené and see if she's got any insights on dismay. Just hanging there. Yeah.
So, okay. So I just launched a new company where we do trauma-informed care, education, training, coaching, et cetera, for businesses, organizations, nonprofits, government agencies that take care of kids, these sorts of things. And one of the main problems that we are trying to solve is around our dismay and my dismay that people in caring professions are told by the organizations they work for that they need to do all of these caring things for the people they serve. Like if you're a social worker, you know, make sure you do trauma-informed care for all the families you serve. But the company itself or the agency itself does not take care of the employees in that same way. And so I feel dismayed by that hypocrisy, because it's like, hello, you have to practice what you preach. And why are the families served more important than the employees? Like sometimes they're the same people. So that is closely aligned with frustration. It feels like a tightness or something, almost like a helplessness in my body. Like there's nothing I can do about it. And it's very unjust. So my body kind of tenses up out of a frustration that I can't do anything about it. There's some intensity and heat, you know, in like the upper part of my body. Dismay. Maybe I don't do gentle dismay. Maybe I only do hardcore dismay.
Yeah. Yeah, anguish.
I'm sure I do. You did great. Yeah. Like maybe like every time I go to Trader Joe's and they've reorganized the store, you know, is like a gentle dismay. Yes. Yeah.
Yes. Or they're not carrying the coconut amino soy saucy thing.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
They discontinue it's a another project version. Product. Yes. Yeah. Okay.
All right.
All right, Elizabeth, you ready?
I'm ready. Yes.
And I know we're going a little long here. I know you got little kiddos to, so yeah. Thanks
for hanging in there. It's totally fine. I just needed my phone charger.
Okay. Okay. But you were like moving.
I was wondering. Yeah.
It died. No, 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 no. Yeah. I was just like.
Yes.
Okay. You will never believe your word. It's so just, it's like a continuation of the conversation that we're having. Are you ready?
I'm so ready.
rejected.
You're kidding me.
I'm not.
That.
Wow, it's dark today. Woo! It is dark today. Yes.
That is so wild.
I know. Okay.
Okay, let's see. Feeling it in my body first, right?
Either way. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it's definitely in my stomach. It's like a clenching, like a preparing feeling, like a tension. Yeah, like I'm about to get kicked, right? So it's like clenching up, yeah, and like getting ready is what it feels, yeah, like.
A bracing.
That's a great word for it.
Yeah.
When was the last time I felt rejected? Gosh, that's a hard one. I had a really difficult interaction with a family member, where it felt like they were just essentially like dismissing like the entirety of our relationship because they were feeling really upset. And I think especially from an attachment perspective, that was so challenging to be with, because it was sort of, it was like throwing the baby out with the bathwater kind of thing. And you know, where it was like, I didn't like this thing you did and I don't like you like at all. I don't like you. I don't like anything you've ever done. Like it just really, it felt shocking. We have since repaired. And we didn't really talk that much about repair today, but repair is a huge part of attachment stuff.
Yeah.
And at the time it was extremely painful, and hard to, you know, really hard to sit with, hard to be with, hard to, move through. And I feel like once I moved through it on my own, then the repair was able to happen. So, yeah, I think that's the last time I felt like really rejected.
Wow. I'm running that through the, avoidant lens, and it's, I've said this many times on the podcast, like as a therapist, I have to get my attachment style to back up because I'll have that, that part of me that's like, fuck them.
Fuck them. Same thing came up for me. I was like, well, you didn't want them anyway. I mean, way less stressful than
I'm like, why are you working so hard?
Isn't that people, so fascinating?
Yes. Pay attention to your therapist and their attachment styles. Yeah. Because
for me, with my anxious side, I was like, oh my God, please don't leave me. How could you do this? I don't, what am I going to do without you? Right. Like, there's that other part of it.
I never liked you either. Bye.
Right. Yeah. We could talk about so many. There's so many things I want to talk about today that we didn't even touch.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, part two.
We could have talked all day. All day.
I know. Yeah.
When I move back to Asheville, we're going to hang out. Okay.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Yes. And I cannot wait to hear about this next project and your journey and all the things.
You.
And I am just so excited for you and so hopeful. I am holding all the hope. I just trust it's going to happen.
Thank you so much, Elizabeth. Thanks for your advice.
And don't forget about that farmer. That's waiting for you back here stateside somewhere with 80 acres of land and a good heart.
Okay, but I'll take someone in Asheville, but I do not want to live in my hometown in California. So do not put that into the universe for me. Asheville, fine. I'll do that.
No, I'm not. I'm talking about here, 80 acres here, down to earth, southern Appalachian, salt of the earth. Yeah, yeah. So anyways, you can bring back your Croatian too. Yeah, okay. All right.
All right. Thank you so much, Elizabeth.
Thank you so much.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you so much for having me. It was such a joy to talk with both of you.
Yay.